again, everyone. Welcome to No Filter Sports, the podcast hosted by me. I guess I'm co-hosted by me, along with Denny McClain and Bob Page. And I got a lot to do today. It's Thursday, September 26th, 2019. I'm going to talk a lot of football coming up today. Lions with a very interesting matchup with Kansas City. Got some baseball to do. Tigers finish up the season. We're also going to talk with Lance Parrish, one of the many 84 Tigers still working in the organization. What a career he's had. Very topsy-turvy, been with the organization off and on for 45 years. We'll talk to Lance a little bit later.
And you know, I wanted to bring this up to Lance, but I'll bring it up to you. Do you know the first time I ever met Lance Parrish? Do you remember that?
How would I know that?
It was not you, Denny. I'm talking to Eli. It was in Eli's room at the Holiday Inn Central in Lakeland, Florida. I called him. I said, I want to stop down, whatever it was. I come down to Eli's room in 76, and there sits a 21-year-old Lance Parrish.
Really?
In the room with Eli, and I had no idea who this kid was. First time I ever saw him or met Lance Parrish.
What was he doing in my room? I don't remember that.
I don't want to get into that.
I'm really surprised.
Did you say he's been with the organization 45 years?
He was drafted in 1974.
Oh, wow.
And he made it to the big leagues in 77 as a backup to Milt May. They traded Milt May in 79, gave him the job. And what I want to talk to him about later is, because you've brought it up many times, Bob, the whole Les Moss, Sparky Anderson thing. I think Les was his manager in the minor leagues. I think Les was a former catcher. Yeah. I think Lance had a good bond with him. And then, of course, he comes in and Sparky gets on him for lifting weights. And everything. So I think there's just so much to talk about with Lance. It's hard to kind of wrap your arms
Les
around
Les Moss was a guy in the White Sox organization for a long time, too. And he worked with everybody. Catching wise, but Les Moss couldn't hit. I mean, that was one thing.
And I know he clashed a little bit with Sparky. Sparky didn't want him lifting weights and all that. But
you know why I was thrilled to meet Les Moss when he got that job? And we've talked about this before. Denny's a little older. He won't understand us. I have never forgotten my 1959 baseball card of Les Moss with a red background, that circular picture. Les Moss, catcher, Chicago White Sox. Baseball card heroes. That was a big deal.
But why wouldn't I remember? I was only 14
because
or 15.
Because you were collecting baseball.
I don't think you were. I don't think you were a sports. It was a revelation to me when I started becoming a reporter that not all baseball players really were fans as a kid. Now, to me, I'm thinking, I love baseball so much. I wanted to play it so badly. I read about it every day. I followed it. And to think that a guy was good enough to play in the major leagues and didn't really care as a fan, but that's common.
I did too, and we told the story in one of the books that my front tire had nothing but Mickey Mantle rookie cards, and my back tire had nothing but Al Kaline rookie cards. I mean, the bike was worth $1 billion, and that was the first of
many dumb business decisions you were about to make in your life.
That's right, by putting good baseball cards in your bike,
Mickey Mantles.
The next time you buy me dinner will be the first time.
Not true. So, I bought you Kentucky Fried Chicken at your house a month ago.
I think I gave you the money back, didn't I?
$20. Balls.
Anyway, so by the way, before I thought we were getting going, but apparently we're not really getting going yet.
Yeah, we are.
I really enjoyed our interview with Wayne Fonts. Got some great response to that. It's been our most listened to show so far, over 40,000 downloads. Wow. He was so much fun.
It was Wayne
to cover him. We're talking about playing wiffle ball in the locker room during the week with the players and everything. There's one thing. This was a video thing that I did, but I want to play it anyway, which shows Wayne's humor. So what happened was I wanted to get a little B-roll. I was doing a story on him of him drawing up a play. I said, "You show me how a coach draws up a play." You're talking to the assistant coaches. I want to see the diagrams, the X's and O's, and the receivers going here and there. And then I said, look at the camera and say something. So here's what happened. This is the audio over the video. Go ahead.
Okay, guys, let's take the same thing, same trap action. Come out here, you block up here, you're going to crack back, and then you're going to come outside in the corner pattern. I've got one guy in the room probably can help me. What do you think, Eli? Eli.
That was him.
You know, there was never a time he was in a bad mood. I was with him, I know, at least a couple hundred times at racetracks and golf courses down in Tampa. And I'm telling you, I never met him on a bad day. Never met him when he didn't have nothing but nice things to say about everybody. Even the people that kind of pooped on him during the late days in Detroit. He had nothing but nice things to say about everybody. Just everybody. That's one of the reasons why he was so pleasant to be around all the time.
And when I introduced him.
As I said here on on the show the other day. I enjoyed your interview with Wayne Foss because I don't know him. I wasn't in Detroit. I didn't know the anecdotes. You guys did a great job with Wayne Foss. We're getting a lot of comments on Twitter and everywhere else about the interview. We just can't get to all of them. Freddie the Pizza Man, our loyal listener, wrote at length about meeting Foss at a men's urinal.
Terrible story.
As Wayne was that day leaving Detroit to the Tampa. And then here's Matt Schreiner. I want to read this from Kalamazoo. I can't remember the last long-form interview I listened to where all I did was sit and smile. Listening to Denny and Eli talk to Wayne Foss was a treat. Thank you, guys. And Eli, Mark Champion wrote you a nice note.
Yeah, he did. And I felt bad when I was going to introduce Wayne. We played that little snippet from the NFL highlight film of 91, and it started with Champion doing a great Barry Sanders voiceover of a touchdown run in that big win over Dallas, their last playoff win, the only Lions playoff win since 1957. My God, it's been 62 years. And I should have said, because Wayne brought Champion to Detroit. Mark was doing work in Tampa, and they'd become friends down there. And I wanted to mention that, it was Wayne who brought Mark here. And Mark, I think, was the best Lion play-by-play announcer.
He was.
I remember.
Yeah,
I
think so, too. Yeah.
Anyway, I beg your pardon. I grew up with Van Patrick, guys, and that was the legendary Detroit Lions
post
announcer.
Van Patrick,
now,
then.
Eli mentioned that so far this show has gotten over 40,000 downloads. This is the highest number we have ever had, and it will be climbing. And on behalf of all three of us, I just want to thank all you guys out there. Thanks for retweeting our shows to all of your followers. Thank you for emailing your friends and family about us and spreading the news by word of mouth. We really appreciate you guys.
Appreciate that, because we are listener supported. Anyway, let's get into it today. We'll talk to Lance a little bit later, but I tell you, the Lions are involved, and I think it's our lead story today. This is, like I say, Thursday before the weekend games. I think it's one of the top NFL games, and we're going to get to see a few things. Are the Lions for real? I was criticized, I saw in some of our letters, because they could easily be 1-2 instead of 2-0-1. No matter, you are what your record is. They have they played well. They've shown some consistency on both sides of the ball. They seem to have an esprit de corps that's working, and we'll see what happens against Patrick Mahomes, who in now is a second year as a starter, third year in the league, is just busting the record book to pieces.
Mahomes looking to throw it. He will. Delivers downfield. Catch made. McCole Hardman. Goodbye. A blur. Touchdown, Kansas City.
And we'll see if the Lions can cover him. He's got speedy receivers. He is on a pace now for 53 touchdown passes and over 6,300 yards passing. The record has never been more than 5,000-something in a season. Only seven quarterbacks have exceeded 5,000 passing yards in a season.
He's had 6,576 yards already in 20 games.
Yeah.
So you talked about the biggest games of the weekend. Who would have thought that the FLs would be in the discussion for the biggest surprise team in the NFL this year? As you said, 2-0-1 against a 3-0 Chiefs team. Now, New England is at surprising Buffalo, also 3-0. Those clubs are 3-0. And I think that probably the biggest game is Dallas at New Orleans Sunday night. Dallas 3-0, New Orleans 2-1. But the FLs are in the discussion with these two other games. Hey, man, this is the game you want to see. This is the game you want to watch. Wow.
And you'd think with the Chiefs are favored by 6.5 coming to Ford Field. So it's a road team favored by a touchdown. That's a tough one to call. You would think, going by the lines that we know or expect, that it would be a lot more than that. So it's an interesting bet. I wouldn't know which side to take on that.
Just because we're playing Kansas City Sunday, I want to tell you something. This Mahomes is throwing 60 passing touchdowns in 20 games. Think about what I just said. 60 touchdowns in 20 games in the NFL. He's got a career 67% completion rate.
That's nothing outstanding. That's good.
He's a baby.
No quarterback who's thrown 40 touchdowns in a season has ever thrown more the following year. The average drop-off has been almost 19 touchdowns for anybody who's done that. He threw 50 last year. He's on a pace for more this year. for 53, as I just said a few minutes ago. So anyway, this is interesting, too. He started the season throwing for more than 350 yards in each game, one short of the record four games, shared by just two quarterbacks. Matthew Stafford.
Yes, Stafford was
Brees.
Yeah.
The late, great Joe Falls once told me that he had actually seen the movie Slapshot more than 30 times. I don't really understand that, but I'm telling you, folks, I have seen this potential movie way more than 30 times. In other words, the stage is set now that everybody's excited for the Lions to come out and lay a huge egg on Sunday.
That's the nature of football anyway. I mean,
nature of the Lions.
But this is always the fascinating part. Does history play a part in the present? Does what happened in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 0-16 in 2008, I think it was, does that have any bearing whatsoever? It has a bearing on your psyche, and I agree with you. You anticipate this to happen. But
who's
I don't know
running
if it's
the team the whole time? All the time you mentioned, who's running the team?
I don't know if it's valid or not. I don't know if it's valid or not because these players don't remember that. These are young players, and they're not part of that.
God, still, I've heard that argument so much.
Well, they haven't been a part of this history at least the last 10 or 15 years. But you know what? This Mahomes, if he continues to play the way he's playing, he's going to rewrite a lot of records if he stays healthy. Mm-hmm. Well, and obviously, we all know what's the number one thing in the NFL? Health.
Yeah, and if he continues to have great teammates, you know.
Yes.
Always look, when we talk about Eli Manning a lot, we don't talk about Archie Manning, who was in the Hall of Fame and lost almost every game he played, at least two out of three because he didn't have players. But he's got Sammy Watkins. This is the speed they have. This guy's got a cannon, Mahomes. He's got Watkins, a 4.4340. He's got Mecole Hardman, 4.33. Even Tyreek Hill's faster than that. His replacement, DeMarcus Robinson, is pretty speedy there. And can who's the tight end? Kelsey. Travis Kelsey, one of the game's fastest tight ends. So
he's arguably the best tight end in the entire National Football League.
And they got Andy Reid, who's a tremendous coach and has tailored the offense around Mahomes.
Is Eric Fisher hurt right now, the former Central Michigan All-American?
He's
the number one pick overall at left tackle.
That I don't know. Anyway, very interesting game. And as well, the Bills, and by the way, the AFC East is such a joke with the Dolphins and the Jets awful. So the Bills are the only remaining threat to the Patriots. And the Bills out of nowhere are 3-0. Be very, very interesting to see the Patriots go there. And by the way, Brady has been very limited in practices this week. He said, "I'm not a spring chicken anymore." But he feels okay, and we'll see. Of course, he's going to play.
What's he again? 42?
42.
42. Yeah, boy, that's tough. Just think about it. 42 in the NFL.
I know. Well.
Now Eli is going to get the floor because his beloved alma mater, coming off that utter nightmare performance, is back home in Ann Arbor on Saturday, taking on awesome, mighty Rutgers. Mr. Zaret.
Well, they're favored by 28 points. They will.
Oh my God, really?
They will.
That's a lot.
They will beat Rutgers. But the bigger story is Shea Patterson's brother took a tweet down. It was very X-rated. But you know what? It's hard to disagree with him. Here's what he said. He said, and I don't know his name, by the way. He goes, "What a joke. You let this guy call plays," meaning Josh Gattis. "He's never done it before. He's hot garbage, absolutely terrible. You continue to just let Harbaugh run Michigan as the head coach as he played there. Was absolutely average as a player." I don't know if I agree about that. "It's unbelievable and ridiculous. You pay this MF-er," he says, $10 million to be average. Highway robbery. Regardless of who is at quarterback and you want to keep the heat on the starting quarterback, that's fine. When it appears that a defense is absolutely effing given up, make the spin you want. My bro is a baller. He will be a G, whatever that means, maybe a giant in the NFL. Can't wait." And, you know, I don't disagree. The Josh Gattis tenure here has been a disaster. Apparently, Harbaugh never mentioned him or met him, some people say, before he hired him. And the offense is pathetic, as Shea's brother says. Nothing over the middle. No creativity. And I think the players are demoralized. And what can happen?
Well.
What can change?
Well. What can change? Rutgers is what can change. Michigan is so lucky that this isn't a bye week for them to sit and stew and think. They're coming right back out against a horrendous team that has no business even being in the conference. This is essentially a guaranteed win for Michigan to get some confidence back. Right. That's what they need.
But they do that every year anyway. They play a lot of Rutgers every year. That's one thing I've got a bitch about, that they always wind up playing these little schools that have
Rutgers in the Big Ten.
Little school.
Well, I'm not saying it's a little school. I'm talking about the ability to play football.
There's always
with the big guys.
There's always mismatches in college football. That's just the nature of it. It's what happens in the big games, Denny. What happens against state? What happens against Ohio State?
Money. They make some money at it. I just think the games suck, and it's not any fun to watch them.
Well, that's college football then. But I think
all of this is Harbaugh's fault. What, no matter what happens Saturday, good, bad, or indifferent, it's Harbaugh's fault. Gattis is not the guy you should have there. You should have gone out and got a real guy who's been
an
offensive.
We're 3 games into the season.
With an offensive about an offensive coordinator.
Bob, we're more than three games into the season, because I want to go back 5 games. 62-39 to Ohio State. Since then, what have you seen? Blown out by Florida in whatever the Citrus Bowl, I think it was.
Yeah. Okay.
Blown out by Wisconsin, and you barely get by Army. So, no, it isn't just 3 games into the season. And I tell you, here's the biggest indictment. This is Joey Galloway, former Buckeye, by the way, on one of the he's a studio host on, I can't keep track, it's either Fox, CBS, or Big Ten Network. He goes, there's no fix for getting run over. When you're physically smacked in the mouth, you can't fix toughness. So I don't know. That's what they say about Michigan.
Yeah, we'll see.
And we'll see.
And Gattis had a big press conference Wednesday, and all he talked about was the team is having two real problems, adversity and consistency. And he says, it's amazing how well we play in practice and how badly we play in games. Does that make any sense?
Sure, it
to
does.
You?
That's me on the driving range. Everything perfect down the middle and long. Get on the course.
Tell me, on a golf course, on a tee area, you can hit the
ball. Oh man,
kidding?
I'm a pro.
I've never seen that from you.
And then I get on the course, my backswing gets short or hit behind the ball. Terrible things happen. Anyway.
All right. So I guess the floor now becomes mine. My alma mater has Indiana on Saturday, homecoming. I'm not going to go back for that, but of course I'll be watching. IU, you know, is really not a bad program anymore. It used to be just a basketball school. They're 3-1 this year. I saw Indiana play at home last year against Ball State. And folks, have you ever been to Bloomington, Indiana? I'd always heard it was the nicest campus in the Big Ten, and it is.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous. Go. Now, Peyton Ramsey is a pretty good quarterback for Indiana, though they got a freshman named Michael Penix who actually started the season. He might play Saturday instead. He's been hurt. Indiana coach Tom Allen is trying to make it difficult for State's defense to prepare for a game, not knowing which quarterback's going to play. BFD. State's defense is so awesome. Bocce and Willekes and those guys are so awesome. I don't see any problems for Michigan State with this game.
What's the spread on the game?
14.
14. Oh, that's not a lot.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got. Northwestern is 25-point underdogs. It was number 8, Wisconsin. And interesting that Nebraska is just a 17-point dog for Ohio State, who visits Nebraska. I guess on the road that should be.
I'll tell you, I like Northwestern with 25. No, I don't. I want Wisconsin minus the 25. The way they played last week was unbelievable.
Anyway, got a lot of baseball to talk about. More as you get ready for Lance Parrish. First one.
I got another thing here about this Michigan State thing. You know, we've talked about this a lot. You and I, best friends for 100 years, and you went to Michigan, I went to State. But there's still all this occasional nastiness and pettiness we see from some Michigan and some MSU fans who obviously hate each other. Now, it could be worse. Iowa President Bruce Harreld says he is unsure whether the Hawkeyes will continue their rivalry game against Iowa State after members of the band said they were physically assaulted and sexually harassed by Iowa State fans earlier this month. Iowa band members said they were accosted by unruly ISU fans following the Hawkeyes' 18-17 win.
I didn't see that as a big story. Now, part of that story that you're not mentioning is that
they're going to suspend that rivalry. Could you imagine Michigan State suspending their rivalry?
One of the elements there that I read is that the band didn't go to a private exit. They went through went through all the Iowa fans, and that's what happened.
And that's an excuse to harass
it
them
isn't.
And sexually harass
no,
them?
No, of course not. But you're on a college campus. There's rampant drinking, and people do stupid stuff. So you got to defend against it a little bit. By being a little more vigilant in how you leave, but no, it's not. They're not going to suspend it. That's nonsense. That's ridiculous. They're not going to suspend the Iowa State game.
Not those. No, no. There's no way they would suspend that relationship.
I'm quoting the Iowa president.
it's an immediate overreaction. Anyway, hey, the reviews are glowing for the 2020 Lincoln Aviator.
Oh, no.
It's true. Star's showroom for just last month, that's Star Lincoln. At 12 and Telegraph in Southfield, Hoop McInerney Star Lincoln, my dealership. Aviator's adaptive suspension combines air springs with forward-facing cameras. You see the bumps and potholes coming. In my Nautilus, they got this Co-Pilot 360 built-in radar. I had a guy stop in front of me. I wasn't looking up at the moment, and it told me, it beeped, and I looked up and said, collision alert. So I'm excited every time I get behind the wheel, knowing not only can I enjoy the rich Revel audio and all the comfort features, but I'm safe too. So come see Star's gorgeous showroom. Buy your new Lincoln with the effortless ownership experience at starlincoln.com. Order your model, features, color, and then just roll in the Star and pick it up. It's part of the Star treatment. Hoop McInerney, Star Lincoln, 12 and Telegraph in Southfield.
I have never seen you like anything so much in my life as this car.
How about you liking your David Hull read?
Oh, I love David Hull.
David, you know what I love? I love our producer, Brandon McAfee. Denny forgets his copy every show.
No, Denny just didn't forget his copy.
TV shot.
He's sensitive.
Denny is
sensitive, Bob.
Bob, be careful today, okay? I didn't forget anything today. I had a real difficult time getting
Denny,
here today.
Don't get defensive.
I'm not defensive.
Don't get
offensive.
Don't get offensive. Now, David, now, by the way, before you
sat in traffic for an hour and 15 minutes
Nobody
today.
Cares how long you sat
in traffic. I never moved for an hour and 15 minutes.
Or that you almost had to pee on Drew's front lawn because you're in traffic so long.
Let me tell you
These
something.
These are stuff we don't need to discuss with our audience.
Another
okay?
moment, it was on
Read
the street.
Read the damn spot.
Excuse me. David Hull and Hull Financial. If you would tell him,
see what you do, Bob.
Turn
you
his
see
mic
what you
off
do.
A second, because it's flicking all the time.
Okay.
All that.
By the way, I just got a refi from Hull Financial.
I know you did, and you've saved all kinds of money.
1.25%,
and they did it in less than 19 days. And you got a haircut that day too.
That's right. There you go. Give the number, and we thank
David Hull and Hull Financial. If you're thinking about refinancing your home, Hull Financial would love to save you money. Their phone number is 248-308-5000. 248-308-5000. D Hall at HallFG.com, or give him a call, like I just said. Maybe you want to take money out of your home. Give David Hull a chance and get lower rates, better options, and much more personal service.
Yes, indeed.
Industry average for a refi is 44 days. Hall does it in only 19 days. Ask Eli. That's the truth. Take it from the customers. They have over 800 five-star reviews. They will fight for you even if you have a dent or something else. Email at dhall at hallfg.com. That's dhall at hallfg.com. Or call 248-308-5000 and tell them Denny and Eli and the guy in New York, Bob, sent you. And No Filter.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All righty then.
I want to talk about Pete Alonso.
Good.
Go ahead.
I'm an expert on that subject.
I got to tell you, we're all experts. The guy's a superstar in his first year.
I watch almost every game the Mets play.
He's got to be rookie of the year. I don't think there's any question about that. He's got, 50 home runs already?
51.
51.
As we tape this.
Amazing. Oh, amazing for a rookie. God.
All-time Mets record. One shy of Aaron Judge's all-time Major League Baseball record of 52. Most home
for
runs
rookies.
For a rookie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So what happened to the Mets? They got a guy hitting 50 home runs. They got a possible Cy Young. If this guy wins a Cy Young again, I'm quitting.
No, he deserves
it.
If
you want to talk about Jacob DeGrom, he finished the season this week 11-8, 2.52. I told you on the last show he had 9 starts this year of 7 innings or more in which he gave up 0 runs and got 0 wins. He pitched 7 scoreless innings against the Marlins in his last start. Okay.
Well, there's a big powerhouse.
And that means he finishes the season with 24 straight scoreless innings. He has allowed 3 runs or fewer in 57 of his last 63 starts and 1 run or fewer in almost 50% of his career starts. The Mets didn't provide any run support.
Just let me say this. Yeah. Denny, I understand. You won 31 games. No one will ever do it again. It's been almost 100 years since anybody did it. Winning games is important for a pitcher. But the game has changed. The wins, as Bob just outlined to
are
you.
Not important.
they're important, but if you go seven innings and give up no runs and don't get the win, what's more important, that you gave up seven runs or seven innings and no runs, or that you didn't get the win? You gave up 0 runs in 7 innings. He has done it. His ERA attests to it. The most important stat for a pitcher might be ERA. I don't know.
I think so. I think ERA is the bottom line.
And what's DeGrom's ERA this year?
2.4. 2.6.
Okay. Yeah, 2.4. Yeah. And how much baseball has Keith Hernandez played and seen in his lifetime? He's a great announcer for the Mets. So Mech said on the air the other night that Jacob DeGrom, I quote, is as consistent a starting pitcher as I have ever seen.
Well, he is consistent, that's for sure. Okay, Look at the history of the two years. It's been unbelievable how good he's been.
Speaking of pitchers, last night, Wednesday night, Zach Greinke, yep. 8.1 innings, no runs, 9 strikeouts, a whip in the game of .36. Is there any way the Astros, if they don't win the World Series, is it a total collapse? They've got Verlander 20-6, 2.5 ERA, Cole 19-5, 2.5 ERA, Greinke 18-5, 2.9 ERA. With three pitchers, all stoppers, how do you ever lose a series?
I don't know.
And fortunately for them, they're not stuck in that ridiculous one-game wild card playoff that the Brewers and Washington play. And by the way, the Brewers on September 5th, okay, that is 21 days ago, were 7.5 behind the Cards in the Central. They had 23 games left. They are now in the playoffs. They clinched last night. They've won 17 of 19. They beat the Reds, and now they're just a half game back of the Cards for the division. And this, at least the last couple of weeks, without Christian Yelich, perhaps the best player, the best hitter in baseball. So,
and the Cardinals have really played well. Yeah. Like, they play well every year. I mean, that's an organization that fundamentally is so sound. It's
yeah,
incredible.
But Milwaukee's been so unbelievable. They're 1.5 back of St. Louis, and they beat them out for the division title.
But what I'm talking about is, historically, the best organization in the last 30, 40 years has been the St. Louis Cardinals.
I mean, Yankees, by far the biggest followers in baseball. More St. Louis Cardinal fans everywhere than anybody but the Yankees, mainly because of Clear Channel, KMOX St. Louis, which established so many Cardinal fans all over the country for so many years when there was no TV.
I'm not going to argue with you about who's got the most fans around the country, but I want to tell you something. Every time we went in with the Detroit team, it seemed like we had more fans in there than the team we were playing. And especially in the California teams out there.
Oh, sure.
More than half the crowd was from Michigan. It's amazing how many Michiganders we got out in every state. They somehow find a way in.
Well, Denny, we know what that's about, and it breaks all of our hearts. Our people, so many of them, had to move during the great economic crisis disaster in Michigan. And anytime, you know, you go into Phoenix or, as you say, any city in California or in Florida, there's so many Detroiters down there in those places who had to leave Michigan, had to.
Well, let's talk about our Tigers.
Let's talk about our Tigers. By the way, they lost Wednesday night. They're to the Minnesota. They're 5-1 was a score. Point is, they're 46-111.
It's embarrassing.
With 4 games left, tickets for last night's game on StubHub were for $6.
Oh my goodness!
And by the way, so you can get a ticket for $6 and a beer for $12.50. That's a 24-ounce version.
The beer is $12.50.
So now the tickets are less than the beer. Thursday's matinee today, which is going to be starting as we are recording the show on Thursday, tickets listed at $7. But they are guaranteed the number one draft pick. And here's what's interesting, okay? There's a minor league team, kind of minor. It's really sub-minor leagues. It's the United Shore Professional Baseball League, Andy Appleby's league that plays out in Utica.
Right.
And the winning pitcher last night, Randy Dobnak, okay, who went to Alderson Broaddus College in West Virginia. The only thing I ever heard of Broaddus is that's Calvin Broaddus, a Snoop Dogg. I never heard the name Broaddus before for a player, for a person, or a school. Anyway, he was playing for the Utica Unicorns in this USPL baseball league right up here in Sterling Heights. They signed him to a minor league contract, made his major league debut in August, and he's had a 1.59 ERA ever since in 21 innings. He was driving Uber and Lyft in 2017 as he played in the United Shore League. And by the way, his LinkedIn profile says he's an excellent driver with a 4.99 Uber driving rating. And he's very proud. He goes, I have only one 4-star. I'm hoping it was a mistake because they should all be 5-stars. He beat the Tigers last night. And although very few players can ever hope to make the major leagues from the United Shore League, this is a success story.
We talk about household names. Here's a couple I want to run past you guys. Try this one on. Emerson Hancock. No?
No idea.
Try this one on. Cole Wilcox.
Nope.
No.
These are two, and I'm going to quote George Kell on this. These are two big right-handers, throw extremely hard, Al Kaline. They both pitch for Georgia. Hancock is expected to be the number one pick in the baseball draft. Wilcox might be two or three, or a first baseman at Arizona State named Spencer Torkelson. Now, boys, my question to you is, do you pick, if you're the Tigers, for need, or do you pick just the best player?
You pick a guy that can hit the ball. They got plenty of pitchers in the system.
So you're saying you're going to pick for need then?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We got enough pitchers, they say, to float a battleship right now. Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and some of the other guys. And listen, God forbid Mize and Manning don't work out. We've got another 10 years of this, what we saw this year. But no, they need runs. They need home runs. I mean, they need everything everybody else has already. You know, teams are hitting how many hundreds of home runs every year now, and here we are. What did we hit, 45 this year? Maybe 50?
God, is that old? No, God, it's more than that.
I'm telling you, it's nothing more. The leading guys only got 15 or 16 home runs.
Yeah. One of the other very top prospects is a kid named Patrick Bailey from North Carolina State. You know what position he plays? He's a catcher. Can you imagine, after letting all-star James McCann walk away without even a contract offer, after Grayson Griner's finishing the season at the Mendoza line, and the big prospect, Jake Rogers, as we record this, is hitting 124. They've done nothing. Would Al Avila have enough cojones to take a catcher?
You know what's interesting?
The Tigers have hit 145 home runs this year.
45.
In comparison, Minnesota's at 299.
299. So, yeah. So, you know, now that you bring it up, this minor league system that's just, who knows, I guess it's ranked in the middle, but with all the prospects they've gotten, of the 17 prospects that the Tigers have gathered since they started trading people away in 2017, only four have made the majors: Candelario, Jake Rogers, Demerit, the kid they just got from Atlanta, and Willie Castro. So only Isaac Paredes, and Paredes came for Alex Avila, by the way. He's the only one among the top five prospects in the organization. So it'll be worth it if all these picks and prospects get to the World Series like they did for the Cubs and the Astros, but we don't know. So here are the names for J.D. Martinez, Sergio Alcantara, Jose King, and Dawal Lugo. He made it here. Actually, Lugo makes the fifth one that made it to the majors. It's just Grayson Long, Elvin Rodriguez they got for Upton, Daz Cameron, Frankie Perez. Where are they? Nolan Blackwood, Logan Shore, Willie. So it's still a work in progress, but I don't know. We haven't seen a lot of progress so far.
I got a question for Denny here. I tweeted this out the other day, actually. We had Spencer Turnbull, the Tigers' young right-hander, pitching against Minnesota this week, and then Daniel Norris the next night. Now, Turnbull was 3-15 going into that game. He had been 0-10 at Comerica this year. He pitched fairly well. He loses anyway, so he finishes his season 3-16. Norris went in 3-12, didn't get a decision. So, Denny, should these kids be out there getting hammered every time? What's this going to do to their future confidence? And should the Tigers not have been pitching them with those kind of records?
You know, they've pitched early in the ballgame relatively well. They really have, the two guys you referred to. As they get later in the game, according to this rule that they pitch only 6 or 7 innings and 100 pitches, they don't do so well the longer they stay in. That's normal. And God forbid they have to pitch 9 innings. But no, I think they've got pretty good success. It's hard for me to say that. But I mean, based upon what they do early in the ballgame, they've done well. Turnbull has done well early.
This will not hurt their confidence. Could be in 3-16 on a season.
You know what will hurt their confidence? If the Tigers don't start scoring runs. Because I played with the Washington Senators one year, and I knew when I went out there, if I got a run, that was going to be a lot. And seldom did you get more than a run or two. And I'm going to tell you, it does something to your confidence. You go out there and you try to throw everything so damn hard the first three or four innings to try to wind up with a little lead in the beginning of the ball game. Then if you don't score, you're demoralized because you know you're going to give up a couple of runs. But the bottom line is, if you don't get a couple of runs somewhere along the way early in a ball game, it kills your confidence.
Now, here's something for Eli, okay? I don't remember this. I know I was still in Detroit, but the Tigers had a pitcher, and help me with this, Eli, you might recall this, who had lost like 18 or 19 one year, and Sparky Anderson told us, I will not let him lose 20 games. I'm going to shut him down. Do you remember that? And I'm just wondering, again, with these kids losing all these games, don't you want to shut them down?
I know Mike Maroth lost 20 in 2003. Yeah, he's the only pitcher since 1980.
Sparky said he wouldn't let this guy, and Maroth didn't pitch for Sparky.
I don't know. Yeah, Maroth lost 21. Yeah.
I lost 22 in Washington.
Lolich lost 21 in 74.
Yeah.
Did he really?
Roger Craig lost.
Nobody remembers.
Roger Craig lost 24 for the 63 Mets and 22 for the 62 Mets. He lost 46 in two seasons. But here's you know, and we've always said about the Tigers, they've had some bad luck also. For example, they signed Jordan Zimmerman. Now, was that a stupid signing? Was that a mistake of a signing?
It should have been a good signing.
It was a great signing.
You ready for this?
You know what his record is?
1-12. 1-12.
And what's his ERA?
It's in like 670,
680. 6.85.
Yeah. He pitches the seems like a really good guy.
He's a good guy.
He seems like a really good guy.
You know, yeah. The problem with him is, you know, we were talking about the other two guys. They gave up runs late in the game. He gave them up in every inning.
I know.
I mean, that was the problem.
And we get leads too.
Eli, every pitch he throws, if it isn't a hanger, it's down the middle.
Down the middle. Or if it's on the corner, it's in the middle of the zone.
Absolutely.
Anibal Sanchez, another Brad Breakday guy. He was a good pitcher. They gave him an $80 million contract, got out of that. Zimmerman's another one. They owe him $22 million for another couple of years, so they have had a couple of bad breaks.
How many years does he have left?
I think a couple.
Wow.
It was 5 years, $22 million. He's been here 3 years, so probably two left. And meanwhile, you know, I want to talk to Lance about this, and we talked to him shortly about this whole strikeouts thing. Major League Baseball set a new single-season strikeout record, the 12th straight year, 41,208 strikeouts. And by the way, before this record run of 12 straight years started in 2008, the old mark had been 32,000. So this right now is fully a third more. So with the home runs and the strikeouts, you know, even a ground ball to short, if you're a baseball fan, you like to see how a professional does it. They backhand it. They throw off balance. There's action and there's the artistry of the game, even in a ground out. But a strikeout where nothing happens is just a killer for fan interest, unless, of course, it's a, you know.
Unless it's a 1-0, 2-1 ball game, I mean, but the thing with the strikeouts, and I think there's a good reason for it. Number one, the pitching is better, but the hitters are worse. I mean, you can't strike out 41,000 times and have good hitters in the league.
Are they worse, or are they just trying to hit a different way? And they're not. We don't build runs anymore in baseball. We don't manufacture runs with sacrifices.
You're probably right to a degree, because everybody wants to drive the big Cadillac.
Yeah,
even something bigger than that now, probably a Mercury, right? Yeah. A Lincoln.
A Mercury doesn't exist anymore.
Right,
but maybe a Nautilus.
But
maybe a Nautilus with Star Lincoln.
Denny's got a Mercury.
Denny's alluded to the great quote. I've mentioned it before. Ted Williams, Denny's old nemesis, said singles hitters drive Chevrolets or Fords, whatever it was, and home run hitters drive Cadillac. Everybody wants to hit home runs. That's why they're striking out so much.
And the technology, the video, the algorithms, the analytics.
And it's in conflict with each other. Let me tell you why. Because the ballparks are smaller. Yet we're getting more home runs and more strikeouts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and one other thing, too, guys. I saw this on one of the games I was watching that they fonted this on the screen. Just 15 years ago, the average major league fastball was 88 miles an hour. Now it's over 92. The kids are bigger, stronger, and they're throwing harder than they ever did.
Yep,
and that's the problem. They all want to throw so hard, they lose sight of the strike zone. That's the problem. That's part of the problem, because they're not pitching down and away anymore. They're not pitching up and in, down and in. They're just trying to throw strikes because they're throwing the ball at 90 miles an hour, and they think that's good enough to get anybody out. Well, it's not.
Lance Parrish, come up in about 10 or 15 minutes, 10 or so. I want to ask you, why is eye surgery like No Filter Sports? Because it's convenient. And it's lifestyle. You can listen to us whenever you want, and you can get precision vision anytime you want without first having to reach for your glasses or stuff those contacts in. That's lifestyle. That's convenience. And that's why Dr. Yaldo is the number one eye surgeon in all of Michigan. Over 30,000 LASIK procedures. He's got his custom LASIK. The CAT system is the most precise in the entire world. And the testimonies from people who are sick of their contacts and hate putting them in and lose their glasses or they get scratched up. Love what happens when you get LASIK. Also, there's multifocal lens implants that I got because I couldn't read anymore. And, man, nothing's worse than reading glasses. I got multifocal lens implants. I can read the small type. And I got 20/15 vision at a distance. Get the best and pay the least. By the way, a lot of noise out there about low-price LASIK. Then you go to that place and find out what the real price is. Dr. Yaldo will beat any LASIK offer you get. The evaluation is free. Call 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. And Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Management. He's a big sponsor of ours, a big supporter of ours, as we are of him. He writes into the show. He's such a great fan. We love him. And he also will give you a complimentary consultation, answer all your financial questions, create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. Call Luke Nowacki, the premier wealth manager in Michigan, 248-663-4748. Retirement fast approaching, perhaps. Hey, hard to do it alone. Get a plan. Let Luke set it up for you. And if your younger life happens, got to be prepared for those future obligations. So support Luke Nowacki. He will help set you on the right path. 248-663-4748. That's Pinnacle Wealth Management. Securities and Investment Advisory Services are off the Royal Alliance Associates. You know the disclaimer. Marketing names, products, or services referenced here independent of Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Got a few more minutes with you people on radio at WDFN. By the way, Tony Trovato, the program director over there, sent us a little note the other day saying the show sounds good.
Great.
That's good to hear on AM radio.
Well, let me tell you what I got today.
What do you got?
Let me tell you what Joe Madden says about his Cubs.
Oh, what a collapse.
Oh, just
your
terrible.
Cubs.
Just my Cubs. They are still my Cubs. He says the problem with my Cubs is that they don't drink enough beer. He said, I'm telling you, he says, I just love it when our guys interact with each other and go out at night on the road together. So he said, that's one of the problems. He said, where's John Lackey when you need him? You know the story about John Lackey,
I hope. You guys have a problem with what happened with Bryce Harper the other night after signing that ridiculous contract with the Phillies. He goes back to Washington, the team he left, and that night, the Phillies are officially eliminated from playoff contention by the Nationals, who right. are going to the playoffs. And the fans went nuts on Harper, booing him the entire time.
Why is it ridiculous that he got $7 billion? Why? Why is it ridiculous?
No.
Somebody was willing. Wait
you
a minute.
Tell me.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. Someone was willing to pay him the money. What should he do? Say no, Bob?
You're asking me a question? Yeah. Let me respond with a question. What's he hitting this year?
Doesn't make any
difference. Matter.
260.
Doesn't make any difference, Bob. They paid him. They gave him money to play.
And that's not the story you're talking about. You're talking about the fans' response to him. And yes, it's going to be a little bit worse because he left there voluntarily. He got $300 million from another team. So sure, they feel a little miffed.
Sure.
That's going to happen in any city. And by the way, he said most of the heckling was okay, but they crossed the line in the eighth inning yesterday. He did not get specific.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Because they were drinking all night. He goes, I get it everywhere I go. That's nothing new. But the last two innings, it's just not right. It's not right. So anyway, the funny thing he said was he's eager to get back to Philadelphia and the great fans there. Tell me any city in America where the fans are nastier than Philadelphia.
The worst sports town in the country.
Right. So he loves the fans.
They boo Santa Claus in Philadelphia, as they say.
Listen, fans, I call it the Chris Chelios syndrome. We hated him. He was the Blackhawk that we couldn't stand, and he comes here. He's our guy. We love him. So that's just the nature of the game. And
hey,
that's
fellas, I saw a story in the Detroit papers on Thursday morning that I really didn't like. I bet you saw it, and I know you got some thoughts about it. Tom Izzo has three words for anybody out there who is blasting his son getting a spot on Michigan State's basketball team as a walk-on. Quote, haters gonna hate. Now, Stephen Izzo does not even have a scholarship to Michigan State. Tom's got to see his kid play only four times last year at a local Lansing high school. What difference should it make to anybody? He's not using up a scholarship. He's sitting at the end with his dad, and he's learning from one of the greatest coaches in college basketball history. So what?
Does it eliminate somebody else from the team, though?
Right.
Or is there an unlimited number of people they
can
have?
You know, those guys sit at the end of the bench. They ain't playing
anyway. Well,
still.
I mean, if it's eliminating somebody who
was a player,
then maybe. If it's just sitting on the end of the bench and being part of it and not taking up a scholarship or not taking up a roster position, then I'm okay with it.
And but, he might be a great kid. He might be a great student. But
he is a great kid.
But if he takes away from another player who's a real player, you know, hey, listen.
Those guys aren't going to play anyway. Nobody sitting at the end of Michigan State or Michigan's bench gets into games unless it's a complete blowout. You know that.
Well, you know, it is what it is. But the bottom line is I still think you have to earn your way on a team. And your dad can put you on the team, but you must be able to be competitive and play.
I agree.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Calvin Johnson.
Oh, boy.
Now, I haven't got my Sports Illustrated this week, but this one hit the
big time.
Big time. Well, you know, the reports of the upcoming article. And there's a lot in there. A fascinating article written by Michael Rosenberg, our old Detroit Free Press pal. One of the aspects that I kind of enjoyed is that he revealed that he smoked marijuana after nearly every game he played because that was his preferred choice of medicine. He says, you go into the training room, get all you wanted, Vicodin, Oxycontin, Percocet. To me, it's stunning how ignorant a team at the NFL can be and people in general to think that you should give a player an addictive opioid that kills tens of thousands of people a year when they become hooked on it, instead of cannabis, which is a plant and is still ruled as an illegal substance in the NFL. And I want to talk to Calvin about this because one of the first guys that came out to say, hey, I'm not going to take the opioids, I'd rather smoke pot, it helps me come down from the game, was a guy named Nate Jackson, a receiver for the Eagles and other teams, and Denver for many, many years. Anyway, a lot in that article. I don't know if we have time to go to
get him on next week.
I would love to.
Hey, fellas, are you forgetting something? We still got the mailbag to do
We still have Mr. Lance Parrish.
You want to get
too.
To Lance now?
No, you want to wait for
the mailbag for the last segment?
We're going to do Lance in about five or 6 minutes. And now that part of the show, the mailbag. By the way, our number, 760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS, or write asknofilter@gmail.com. Bob, what's in the mailbag?
First up today from Francis, gentlemen, great job. I was sort of a slow starter to pick up your show, but I have not missed an episode in months. It's so great to listen to some sports talk that isn't complete BS on the terrestrial radio waves here in Detroit. Keep up the good work. Here's one, ready for this, from an old friend. Denny, I don't think you know him, of Eli's in mind, Bill Collins, who's gotten to be a big shot executive at Ford and PR. Billy writes, greetings from Bellagio, Italy. He's been over there doing a seminar. Rockefeller Foundation, Freedom of the Press thing. He says, I cannot express how happy I am to hear your show. We're lucky to have three well-informed and entertaining guys who can provide some institutional memory and modern-day perspective.
He's our buddy. You shouldn't be reading that. He's our buddy. Of course he's going to say something nice.
Well, isn't that nice?
Yeah, that's nice, but what's he going to say? I've known you guys forever.
Champion's your buddy. Okay. You brought up a quote from him.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Well, geez, I mean, Collins is a huge sports guy, and he has excellent taste, obviously, doesn't he? If he loves
he does,
the show,
Bob.
He listens all the time.
Let it go, Bob.
All right, fine. You want something different? Here we go. Here's one of these jerks who believes he speaks for everybody, right?
Yeah.
So he says, no, Bob, Lions fans are not expecting to beat Kansas City. Nobody is saying that. Fake narrative. Oh, really? So a lot of you folks listening right now who are Lions fans, not one of you thinks they're going to win? Either way, the Lions are 2-0 and the Giants are 1-2 with statistically the second worst defense in the league. I hope Daniel Jones can play cornerback too. Nobody cares about the Giants. From Steven in Port Huron. Well, I guess you're right, pal. Nobody cares about the four-time SB champion New York Giants.
Oh, stop
Eli
talking
on this show,
about him. Come on, Bob. The Giants.
Eli on this show said, and you heard him, there are national teams in the NFL. How about the Dallas Cowboys? That's like somebody in Detroit saying nobody cares about the Dallas Cowboys.
You're right. No, but
people do care about the Packers and New Orleans.
You're right.
So on and so
forth. They do. It's your partisan attachment to the Giants. That's why I don't like mentioning I grew up as a Giants fan because, you know.
Danny refers to the Detroit Lions as we. at us, even though he's a Bears fan. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, keep going. Keep going.
All right, fine.
Sorry, interrupted.
Here we go.
Pardon me.
760-89 balls. That's the number to call us, folks. Couple things. And this, I don't know. The same guy doesn't leave his name. Bob, do your homework. UM had a total of 2 5 stars last year in their recruiting class. That's true. But guess what? They also had 14 4-stars, and there's often a very fine line among various recruiting services about who's a 4 versus who's a 5.
That's true, too.
Denny and Eli not knowing Kari Willis? Please. 4th-round draft pick and captain of Michigan State's football team? Sad. And
time
I
out.
Agree with him.
Time out. Time out. I know that they had a defensive back named Willis. They had a defensive back named Waynes years ago. I watched the games. I didn't know his first name was Kari, but I watched the Spartans. I know they had a defensive back named Willis. I thought by the question it was some high school guy named Willis somewhere.
I did, too.
Anyway, we're out of time.
Anybody talking about Willis? What's you talking about, Willis?
All right. Anyway, we have to say goodbye to our radio audience now before we bring in Lance Parrish. So thank you for listening to us. You have been listening to us on radio to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And now let's bring in our special guest, Lance Parrish.
Well, Lance Parrish, in the fifth inning, his fly ball was important. He went deep enough to left to Martinez that Gibson could get the second. And he lines it to left. Back goes Martinez.
That was Lance Parrish's home run off Goose Gossage, who had just come into the game, Game 5. It made it 5-3. Tigers did win that one 8-5 and won the World Series. And before I introduce Lance, just want to say 45 years on and off he has been with the Tigers. He was drafted in 74 in the first round, made it to the majors in 77, became a starter in 79 when they traded Milt May away, 8 All-Star games, 6 Silver Sluggers, 3 Gold Gloves, 324 homers, and 13th all-time in games caught, 1,818. Lance, thanks for joining us. That home run, I'm sure you've been asked about it a million times. Tell us about the 84 Tigers and how it still is just part of your resume, and I'm sure you can never stop talking about it.
Well, you know, most people forget that I even hit that home. So. by another home run that was hit that night.
Right, that came a little bit later.
No,
but
that was obviously a huge moment in my career. It's one of my bigger accomplishments, one of my better memories, and obviously it helped us achieve our goal that year, so it was a very special moment.
You were 26 years old, and it's interesting because shortly after that, and it's the other side of the story with the Tigers, because your loyalty, and not just yours, but that, you know, that collusion word. And by the way, we didn't hear collusion as much since the mid-80s as we have in the last couple of years. But the word collusion made the headlines a lot back then, and it really, really cost you. How have you dealt with the bitterness of the Tigers? You had a 6-year contract. The contract expires right as collusion strikes, and they won't even give you the same money you made the year before. It hurt you deeply, and how have you managed to put that aside?
Well, you know, time heals most all wounds. I just choose not to hang on to that. I mean, I've moved on from it. Things work out the way that they work out, and I still maintain my relationship with the Tigers, even though the main characters involved in that whole ordeal are all gone now. It was a very disappointing time in my career, I can tell you that, because the more people that I run into that say, you know, you broke my heart when you left Detroit, or you're always, you know, one of my favorite players and you chose to leave. You know what? I didn't want to leave. You know, that's the bottom line.
Sure.
I was almost forced to, you know, to pursue anything that was available out there by, you know, Jim Campbell. And, you know, I guess I do hold a little animosity towards that whole thing. But, you know, for the most part, I never even think about it. But, you know, that was a very difficult time. Grew up with just about everybody in the organization.
Lance.
The Trams, the Gibbies, the Whitakers, and all that. So I wanted to stick around.
Lance, was it Jim Campbell who was the piranha, or was it somebody else?
Peter Uberoth was the piranha. They all fell in line, right? Because nobody would offer you a deal.
Exactly. Peter Uberoth was the one pulling the strings for the whole collusion deal. But, you know, Jim Campbell jumped in line. You know, the thing that disappointed me more than anything that a lot of people might not realize is I had agreed in principle to an extension to that 6-year contract in spring training the year before my last year, 1986. It was almost to the point where I was ready to sign my name to it when they pulled the offer off the table and said they weren't going to negotiate with me until the season was over, which I could not understand because, you know, we had negotiated in good faith. We came to an agreement, and then all of a sudden they pulled the offer off the table. Well, that was because Peter Ueberroth had issued a directive to everybody, according to my understanding, that they were not allowed to sign anybody to long-term deals, that they were going to try to put a freeze on the free agent market, da-da-da. So I feel, you know, Jim Campbell felt like he had me kind of where he wanted me, and that when the season was over, you know, I could not go anywhere as a free agent, so he could deal with me the way that he wanted to and get me for a lot less. So that's kind of the way that went down.
Lance, you have been quoted as saying that leaving Detroit for the Phillies was the biggest mistake I ever made. And you know what bothered me? For such a great player as you were, after you left the Phillies, it's like you had a different team every single year for the rest of your career. That must have been weird.
Yeah, well, it was weird. And, you know, I say that it was the biggest, probably the worst decision that I had made because, you know, in backtracking, I never wanted to leave Detroit. I wanted to stay a Tiger. I wanted to remain a part of that ball club and part of the organization. The only team that was offering me an opportunity to go elsewhere, and because I was so upset with Bill LaJoie and his negotiating tactics, and even though I know he was getting directives from Jim Campbell, was the only opportunity that I had to go was with the Phillies. And I told them, based on the way that they were handling my contract negotiations, I said, you know what, if anybody offers me anything, I'm leaving. Because I can't believe that you're treating me this way. I can't believe that you're putting me through this. After all that I've, you know, been a part of and all I've done for this organization. You know, in essence, they were not going to give me a $1 raise, even though I was vastly underpaid for the numbers that I had put up over quite a few years. Gary Carter was making just about three times what I was making. And I was content with playing out my six-year contract. And I figured when I became a free agent, the Tigers would take care of me. Well, I became a free agent, and they offered me the same amount of money that I had made the last year of my previous contract. So I said, you're not going to give me a $1 raise after the year that I've had. And even though I was hurt for the last couple months of the season, I still had more home runs and more RBIs than most of the catchers in the major leagues. And they weren't going to give me a $1 raise. So that just set me off. I was very, very disappointed.
It's a really black mark on all of baseball. I mean, they chased Gibby out of town the next year. Monahan called him a disgrace to the organization. And by the way, after 86, that's when I left town. You were here one more year. But I remember I was in Tampa when Jack came down there to meet George Steinbrenner. Jack was the number one free agent pitcher, and Steinbrenner basically said, my hands are tied, I can't give you anything, and Jack stomped out of that. So it was just really, really unfortunate timing. You sacrificed. It was time to get paid, and it was forces bigger. In fairness to Campbell, not really. It was forces bigger than all of them. Somehow, every owner was lockstep, and they all colluded together. And a really terrible, terrible time.
And it cost I said, there was one guy pulling the strings, and I have yet to see him held accountable for any of that.
So. Right, he was never held accountable for anything. By the way, when you came back to the Tigers, was it a tough decision that no matter who was there, was it tough to make that decision to come back?
I mean, as a coach? I mean,
as a coach.
No, not at all.
Okay.
You know, I to be quite honest with you, I cut my teeth in the Tiger organization. I grew up a Detroit Tiger, played there for a number of years, was part of a world championship team. I always identified with the Detroit Tigers, even though I played. Or like Bob said, you know, it seemed like a different team every year at the end of my career. I always identified as the Detroit Tiger, and I had always hoped that I would get the opportunity to come back and work for the Tigers. You know, mainly because I identified with the people in Detroit and in Michigan. I felt they always treated me well and appreciated the way that I played. I wanted to have an opportunity to get back in the organization to give a little bit back to the players that were coming through the system, sure. the things that I had learned throughout my career. I wanted to put that old English D on again.
The
way it worked out.
Who was the best pitcher that you caught, and who was the worst pitcher you caught?
That's the worst pitcher. What question is that?
A fair question.
Is it a fair question?
It's a fair question. Listen, Bill Freehan had to catch Joe Sparma. That's the toughest job in the world.
He's not the worst pitcher. Go ahead, Lance. I'm sorry.
Jesus, neither one of you guys ever know what a struggle round ball is, for God's sakes, and you're going to criticize me and Lance. Okay, Lance, go ahead. You and me, Lance.
Show.
It's the Lance and Denny show from now on.
Go ahead, Lance.
Okay, what's the question?
The worst pitcher you ever caught.
Lance, let me back up, Lance. The best pitcher you ever caught and the worst pitcher you ever caught. The one that was difficult to catch.
Hopefully he's not alive anymore when you give the answer. Go ahead.
I don't think he is.
Well, you know, I honestly don't even know if I can answer that. The best pitcher that I ever caught in the Tiger organization was Jack.
Okay.
He was the guy. Most successful. I enjoyed catching him. He's very competitive. A little bit of a handful on occasion, but you know what? I enjoyed
that.
Yeah,
you had a checkered relationship with him, Lance. There were times when you guys did not get along.
Not really. I mean, that's been blown out of proportion. You know, I got into him quite often, as he did me, and it was just, you know, we both were pushing each other. That's kind of the way our ball club worked. So, you know, that was just the give and take of, being a part of the same team for a number of years. So I had no issue with that. But he was a great competitor. I enjoyed catching him. You know, I caught guys like Randy Johnson when I was in Seattle, Chuck Finley, Burt Blylev, and Mark Langston, Jim Abbott out in Anaheim. Steve Bedrosian was a Cy Young Award winner when I was in Philadelphia. I caught him. I caught a number of guys that were really good. So it's hard for me to pick one guy out. I was fortunate to be part of some amazing games that guys threw. And as far as the worst pitcher goes, there's probably a lot of guys that are tied to that.
you talk about catching some great games. Here's a great game that you caught.
He goes to his set. Gentle wait. Here it comes. He sucks him out, and Morris has a no-hitter. Lance Parrish goes out and grabs him, and the Tigers get a no-hit performance for the first time since 1958.
I remember that very well, April 7th, 1984, and you hug Jack and throw him around like he's a little rag doll. That's how strong you were at the time. Anyway, so the only time so when I wrote the book in the 84 Tigers, you told me, I asked you about that game, and you talked about Jack's performance, et cetera, and then you told a very interesting story at the end about what happened in the clubhouse and a phone call you got. Please share that with Denny and Bob and our audience.
Well, you know, when the celebration continued from the field into the clubhouse at Comiskey Park, old Comiskey Park. So, quarters were a little cramped then. Nobody had cell phones like they do now. There was one phone, I think, in the entire locker room, and that was in Sparky's office.
Yeah, I used to use it to
the manager's office. Huh?
He used to use it to bed, he said. Yeah. Go ahead. Don't interrupt us.
Yeah. So we're in the clubhouse, celebrating whatever was going on. And one of the clubhouse kids, one of the guys that worked in there, came up to me and told me that I had a telephone in Sparky's office. And I go, you're kidding me. You have a telephone call from Mr. Campbell. And I said, really? And I went in there and I got on the phone and he started talking to me and he was all excited and, talked about what a great job I did and, how excited he was, and, it was a nail-biter down to the end. And, I was thinking, this is pretty awesome from my perspective, being a catcher, because not too many times does a catcher ever really get the recognition or the credit helping a guy along through a no-hitter. So I thought, wow, this is great. Mr. Campbell's, giving me my due, and he kept going on and on. And, and then he said, when you struck that last guy out, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. When I struck that last, I go, who do you think you're talking to? And he goes, well, who is this? And I said, well, this is Lance. And he goes, well, I didn't want to talk to you. I want to talk to Jack.
But didn't he also
And to backtrack a little bit, when in the conversation leading up to that, He said, there's going to be a little something extra for you in your next paycheck. So I was all excited about that. And when he said, well, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to Jack. I go, well, wait a minute. What about that little something extra in my paycheck? And all he said was, get the hell off the phone and put Jack on.
Oh,
all I did, you know what? That really irritated me after that. So I set the phone down on the desk and walked out in the locker room, and I never did tell Jack. I just carried on with the celebration.
I'll tell you one thing. There was never anything tougher to get out of Jim Campbell than extra money.
Well, we just heard the bigger story before.
Tell me.
He was son of a bitch, boy. I'll tell you when it came to paying people. Listen.
Hey, Lance, you go 35-5 to start the 84 season to win the world championship. Why didn't you guys repeat in 85? And how big a part of that was losing Rupert Jones?
Well, you know, I always thought that we would, 35-5 is next to impossible to repeat. But I thought, you know, as a ball club, we would certainly be in the hunt to win another championship. In fact, I thought we would absolutely win another championship. In fact, I think Sparky predicted it at the after the World Series was completed that, we would win again in 85 and maybe 86. I don't know how far he went down the line. But I think we all felt that. We had a strong enough ball club. We were obviously the best team that year, and really no reason to believe why we wouldn't be just as good the following year. But, you know, we did lose Rupert, and they made a couple moves that that hurt us a little bit as far as the strength of our team went. But, you know, the reality of it is you know, the Eastern Division was
right.
Very, very strong.
Different team
time.
Every year. Yankees,
think,
81,
yeah,
Brewers, 82, Orioles, 83, U84, Blue Jays, 85, and the Red Sox in 86. It was an incredible. The AL East was just a monster.
Well, they referred to the team that won it as the Beast of the East. So, I think that held true. I thought we, held our own and played obviously very well in 84. But, you know, there were some great teams in our division, and it just goes to show you how difficult it is to win. It's hard to repeat. You know, it's hard enough to win one, but it's definitely hard to repeat.
Yeah, so, I'll share something with you, too. When we won the Pennant World Series in 68, we thought we'd win it in 69. Lo and behold, we forgot about Baltimore having four 20-game winners and all
exactly.
the other stuff they had.
Exactly.
You know, that's the problem. You're always playing another team.
You know,
exactly.
Let's step back a second. Your first full season – they trade in 79, they trade Milt May, and you're now the starting catcher. And Les Moss, as I believe, was your minor league manager. Bob keeps on saying on the show how egregious it was that they fired Les Moss to bring in Sparky. I said it may be so, but from a reporter's standpoint, Sparky was a great interview and Les Moss was not. What were your feelings? Moss was kind of your guy, and they bring in this Sparky guy who tells you to stop lifting weights, of all things. How'd that go?
Well, I think it's been well documented, at least I've tried to make it that way, that I loved Les Moss. Les Moss was my manager in AA. He was my manager in AAA.
Wow.
I thought he was a great manager. I thought he knew, you know, just on my experience alone for the 2 years that I was with him before I got to the big leagues, that he knew a little bit about everything when it came to, you know, teaching and helping and directing players. We won the AA championship when he was our manager there. We almost did it when I was in AAA. He gets to the big leagues when Ralph Houck retires. We just come off the West Coast and got our record over 500, and they hired Sparky. Now, Sparky might be a better interview than Les Moss, and we'll never know what might have happened if Les Moss had stayed on as the manager.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, I learned to love Sparky a lot, and I appreciated him for the manager he was and the man that he was. But, you know, that doesn't take anything away from Les Moss. I thought Les Moss was a great baseball man. He went on to become the pitching coach for the Houston Astros when they had Mike Scott, and Nolan Ryan, and Danny Darwin. And, you know, they had a great pitching staff. And I have talked to those guys because we had, we all had an opportunity to work with Les, and they all couldn't say enough nice things about him, great things about what a great man he was, what a great teacher he was. So, you know, Sparky was a great interview. I'm sure he gave everybody a lot of things to write about, good, bad, or indifferent. But Les Moss was a great baseball man, and I thought he would have done very well had he stayed in Detroit.
Yep. He paid all his dues, And Frank Robinson himself said at that point, what Detroit did to Les Moss was the worst thing I ever saw in baseball. That's a quote.
Well, that's at that time, I couldn't argue with him because I was, you know, even though we were getting Sparky Anderson, I was very pissed off that they had fired Les Moss, you know, in order to hire Sparky. Yeah. I just thought that they didn't give him the opportunity he deserved. He had served the organization very well for the few years that he had managed for him in the minor leagues. And I thought he was as much a part of that young nucleus that had come up as anybody. I mean, he worked with all of us at one time or another. So, you know, I just felt like he never really got the opportunity to prove to everybody what he could do.
You've been in the minor leagues for a while now, managing, and it seems like they always send you, and I said this to you the last time we saw each other, was they seem to send you where they need the most help all the time, fundamentally. And I swear to you, I ran into a guy again at the ball club the other night, Friday night I was down there, and your name is being bantied around again, not by necessarily the president of the club, but you know what? You're on somebody's brain down there someplace, and I wouldn't be surprised if something really good happens to you in the near future.
Well, I just hope I have a job for next year.
Oh, you'll have a job.
I haven't heard whether or not I've got that yet.
You know,
I enjoy working for him, to be honest with you. I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I love working with these young guys. So, you know, it's just, for me, it's kind of a dream come true. I mean, what else would I be doing right now? Opportunity to give back and share, you know, a lot of things that were taught to me throughout my career. So I just appreciate the opportunity to be working for the Tigers.
I was going to bring that up. I was going to ask you where the joy is at Western Michigan, at West Michigan, where you manage now in A ball, and you just explained it. But you know, you really are a baseball guy. I mean, your career ends in 95. You become a minor league catching instructor with the Royals. Then you're the manager of the San Antonio Missions. I don't even know what they are. You're a Tiger coach. then you're with the Ogden Raptors of the Pioneer League, the Great Lake Loons of the Midwest League. And by the way, your wife, Arlen, who moved with you to Nashville, she must be a saint, man, because you have taken her on an odyssey across America.
She is a saint.
For the last
I've taken her on a great life's adventure.
Nashville's nice. Anyway, and you were even coaching a 15-year-old travel baseball team. Talk about being a baseball lifer. I guess this is what it is. You need to be somewhere doing something, imparting your knowledge to others.
Well, that's kind of the way I look at it. You know, I was very fortunate to get into professional baseball out of high school. It's really the only thing that I've done that I feel like that I might be any good at. I believe that I've learned a lot of things throughout my career, and there's a lot of stuff that I enjoy passing on to others, these young players that are trying to achieve their dreams. So, you know, for me, it's a win-win situation. And again, I very much appreciate the opportunity to be with the organization that drafted me out of high school. And I hope that, you know, I can help in the development of some of these players that, you know, will hopefully work their way up to the major league level and help them win another world championship here in the not too distant future.
Yeah, but Lance, maybe Eli doesn't know this, and I know a hell of a lot of people don't. You actually turned down a football scholarship to play at UCLA. What position did you play? How good were you? And why did you turn that down?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that if I had to do it all over again, I probably wouldn't have picked UCLA. Because I had an opportunity to go to a few different schools. I went on recruiting trips to Nebraska and USC, UCLA, Arizona State, and I actually went up to Cal Berkeley. Jackie Jensen, I think, was the head baseball coach up there, and Mike White, I think, was the head football coach. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, you're right.
But, you know, I chose UCLA because it was close to home. Dick Vermeil was the head football coach there. I played quarterback in football. I also, you know, I played linebacker, defensive back kind of in high school. So I wanted to play quarterback. I don't guess there was any guarantee as to, you know, where eventually I would end up playing. But the one stipulation was wherever I went, I was going to be able to play football and baseball because that was a big priority for me. And then obviously the Tigers came along and drafted me and I ended up opting to go in professional baseball. But, you know, after watching a few scrimmages at UCLA and Nebraska, and from the sidelines, I was thinking, Well, I don't know if I want to play college football. These guys are killing each other out on the field. So I think I made the right choice in the end, though.
Let me ask you, change course for just a second here. In the organization at this point in time, who do you think's got a chance of getting there in the next year or two, especially next year? Because, boy, this has been a long year, Lance.
And these prospects have not exactly, passed with flying colors.
Are you talking position-wise or pitcher-wise or either-or?
Either-or.
Well, I mean, obviously the nucleus of our pitching staff of the future, I think, and our organization resided in Erie this last year.
Sure.
You know, you've got Matt Manning there and Fiedo and Casey Mize. And I know Burroughs was up in AAA for most of the year. But, you know, those are the guys that they're looking pretty heavily on. And Tarek Skubal has, surfaced as a guy that I think everybody's very high on. You know, he's put up some very good numbers since they drafted him. So, you know, I don't know when. You know, for me, I would hate to see them rush guys, but, you know, I don't make those decisions. I would like to see all those guys have an opportunity to come up at the same time and, you know, kind of make a big impact and big splash on major league scene at the same time. I think, and there are some very quality arms in that bunch. You know, I had Matt Manning last year start the season in West Michigan, and he's the real deal. I mean, he's got a great arm. He's got major league curveball. You know, interestingly enough, I made the comparison when and you mentioned that I had managed for the Great Lakes Loons back in 2007. I had Clayton Kershaw as one of my starting pitchers that year.
Man,
Dodger Philly.
And, you know, and I'm not saying that Matt Manning and Clayton Kershaw will end up, you know, following the same path, but I'm saying that Matt Manning has the same kind of stuff that Clayton Kershaw had when he was pitching for me at Great Lakes. And I would never in my wildest dreams have imagined Clayton Kershaw going on to achieve what he achieved.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, the possibilities are there. Matt Manning's very talented, very poised. I think they're going about it the right way, and he's going to work his way up the ladder. I believe he'll probably start next year in AAA and probably at some point in the season next year, you'll see him up in Detroit. But same thing goes with Mize and Fiedo and Skubal. And, you know, how they do is going to dictate when eventually they end up, you know, making their debut into the major league situation. But, you know, all of them are very, very talented.
Who can hit a baseball?
He wants to know who can hit a baseball. And you may be referring to the number one draft pick, Riley Green, who's under your tutelage.
Anybody they got down there who can hit?
Well, you know, that's a little different deal. You know, we've got some guys that are very talented. I don't think any of them have put the numbers up at this point that would open anybody's eyes and say, this guy's a can't miss here or can't miss there. You know, Riley Green, when he came to me at the end of the year up at West Michigan, made some of the most amazing catches in center field. So he's a real deal defensively. And I know he's got the ability offensively. But, you know, he was 18 years old when he came to, you know, I mean, he still is 18 years old, but, you know, he's just one. I think he tried too hard. He was very aggressive, tried to hit everything. You know, if you want to be a good hitter, there's got to be a little discipline involved. And I think that, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to realize that he can't hit everything they throw up there. And I think that process is starting right now because I know he's down in instructional ball with a bunch of the other guys.
Yeah, the night I was there.
High on the Tigers.
And he, by the way, he is the number one pick in last week's draft.
And I can tell you, the night I was there with you, bottom line was he swung at everything. I think he struck out three times that night. But pitches were a foot and a half outside.
But, you know, the good thing, you know, that I see from my perspective is I'd rather have a guy that's really aggressive than a guy that's very passive at home plate. You know, I want guys to feel like they can hit everything that a pitcher throws up there. But it takes time for them to understand that, you know what, you can hit everything.
Right.
And it's hard enough to hit strikes, and you have to be a little bit more disciplined in your approach. So I believe he'll get there. I mean, he's a very intelligent guy, great teammate, love his personality. So I think he's got, you know, he's got what it takes, and I hope that you know, he puts things together quickly, and he can go up there and show everybody what he's capable of doing. Because, you know, for me, he's just I look at him and I go, you know what, he's a can't miss guy.
Help me out with a theory here. Now, you have said, and I think we all agree with you, that Lou Whitaker not being in the Hall is a crime. You compare he and Trammell, and it makes no sense. Here is my theory, and I've said it many times on this show, that the people who vote go a lot on personality. Alan Trammell always talked to the media. Alan never said a lot, but he was personable, and he was responsive, and he was just an all-around good guy. Lou Whitaker, I believe, was just a little socially awkward, not his fault. He was uncomfortable doing interviews. He didn't like cameras and microphones, which has got should have nothing to do with his ability to play baseball. Is the reason Alan is in, and maybe one of the key reasons Lou isn't, is that Lou that I think reporters thought that he was either standoffish, and I think that was just his personality. And is that one of the reasons why Lou is out and Alan is in?
Well, first of all, I don't think that should have anything to do with it.
It shouldn't. But does it?
I mean,
it shouldn't. Of course, it shouldn't.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a voter. I don't know what the criteria is for the guys that have the ability to vote for guys to get into the Hall of Fame. You know, Lou was more of an introvert. I don't know if you know, socially awkward, whatever you want to say. I don't think he was socially awkward. I just don't think he felt very comfortable talking to the media or you know talking about himself. So, you know, I think that it should always go back to, you know, what his numbers are. How did he play? What did his peers think about him? You know, you watch the way guys play today. You watch the way Lou played. There wasn't anything that anybody could do today that he wasn't capable of doing when he played. His numbers and Alan's numbers are almost identical.
Right.
So from that perspective alone, how does Alan get into the Hall of Fame? And Lou gets bumped off the ballot after his first year being on the ballot. I just don't understand that. So it's very frustrating for me because when I sat there behind the plate for as long as I did and watched both of them, to me, one was as good as the other and one was just as valuable to our team as the other. And one's in the Hall of Fame and the other one's not. And I don't understand that. I can't really get my head around the reasoning. I don't understand why he's not even being considered. And I, in my opinion, believe that he does deserve to be in the, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
And I'll tell you somebody else who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. You do. 8-time All-Star. And that would go right along with Freehand. He was a 10 or 11-time All-Star. It makes no sense to me how the hell they vote guys in anymore. It used to be.
Well, like I say, I don't know what the criteria is.
I don't either.
Or, you know, what they look at, but. There's certainly guys that should get more consideration than they do.
Absolutely.
And I think it's water under the bridge, but if collusion hadn't happened, and if the Tigers had paid you as they promised to, you would have stayed here. You wouldn't have had that bad experience in Philadelphia. I think we talked back then, because I went to New York around the same time, and I think I said to you, you know, it's all the same as a microphone and a camera, but it's just different here. I'm not as comfortable. And you were taken out of your comfort zone where you've been your entire career. And although you did have some really good years later on in Los Angeles, I think that that alone could be one of the reasons why your numbers didn't turn out to be what they could have been. Anyway,
I've come to grips with that. You know, I realize that if I'd have stayed in Detroit, things might have played out a little differently, but you know they worked out the way that they did, and that's life. I don't dwell on it. I mean, I will sit here in front of you and everybody listening, and tell them that I wish I would have had the opportunity to play my entire career in Detroit. I never wanted to leave. You know, it was kind of a circumstance beyond my control. It's almost like they forced me out the door, but you know that's just the way things work sometimes.
Yep.
It's my fault that I didn't go out and be as productive as I could have been once I left Detroit. I had a few more good years after that, but you know I just felt like once I left Detroit, it was kind of a downward spiral from there. And,
okay, I want to add this, Lance, since we're talking about this subject. People have been listening to you for some time on this program. How bright you are! What a knowledgeable baseball person you are. How come you're not managing in the big leagues? Is there some kind of
rap against you? And do you still hold hope? You're 63. Do you still hold hope?
Do I still hold hope? No, I do not.
You don't?
You know, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I think that I'm beyond consideration for managing at the major league level. And there again, I mean, what's the criteria involved in getting that job? I have no idea. Right. You know, I feel like I've paid my dues. I have an understanding of the game. I've been involved in the game for a long time. I was a successful player and all that. But you know what? I feel like my time has come and gone. I appreciate the opportunity to be managing where I'm managing. So, you know, I'm not looking for an opportunity to manage in Detroit. They have a manager there.
I'm going
to, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to work with the guys that I work with now.
I'm going to give you an opportunity now. But listen to me, because this is somewhere down the road. Geez, if Gardy starts off bad next year, I got a hunch somebody's going to be in Detroit.
Well, let's not root for Gardy to have a bad
start.
No,
I'm not rooting for Gardy. No. Gardy's a good man. He's a terrific guy. But, you know, if something happens up here, if they start off the way they finish this year, something's going to happen pretty quick.
Well, hopefully you're back at West Michigan. That's where you want to be. Hopefully they
sign
you.
There you go. There you go.
And we really appreciate you joining us. Great talking to you, Lance.
Lance, thanks a million.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it. All right.
Have a great day. Thank you.
All right.
The nice thing about Lance is it doesn't sound like he's got any bridges he wants to burn. And obviously, being in Detroit where he started, that would be a nice way to come back and manage a ball club, wouldn't it?
It would be nice.
But you know, it was really nice that his career was successful. He played with some great people. He managed some great people. I mean, to be around Kershaw and some of these other, Jack Morris, catch a no-hitter. Listen, he's had every thrill you can have in this game except the Hall of Fame. And eight times in a – see, I think there should be a way you get in the Hall of Fame, so many all-star
You know what? I'm going to interrupt you right here and say I don't think his numbers really justify it, but let's save that for another time.
Well, but you know what? A lot's got to do with character and integrity and things like that, and he's had plenty. You know, he's had plenty of that, and he's just a good guy. Listen, I saw the way these kids listened to him when I was over in West Michigan, and I want to tell you, they stand at attention for him because he doesn't take any BS – from anybody, and they know that he's there to teach them the fundamentals of the game. And I saw this kid Green play that night. He could run. The problem is you still can't steal first base.
All right. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you again on Monday for another edition of No Filter Sports.